This is HPR episode 2566 entitled HPR Community News for May 2018 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 63 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is HPR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in May 2018.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to another edition of HPR Community News. This time, it's May 2018. Joining me this evening is...
Hi, it's Dave Morris, who nearly didn't get his press-to-talk button pressed in time. Anyway, Dave Morris.
Truncate silence, Dave. Truncate silence.
Yeah, I need truncating sometimes.
Anyway, for those of you new to HPR, HPR is a community podcast network where the shows are delivered by you, the public. And the community news is a view into that. It gives you a summary of the shows that have been aired last month, goes through stuff on the mailing list, and brings you up to date on what is going on in the community, from what we can see of it, at least. And would you like to introduce the new host, Dave?
Well, this will be a truncate silence bit, because there ain't none.
How is that possible, Dave? How is that possible that we have no new host?
No, it's just... I mean, come on, people. Be a host.
In a way, it's a blessing because that last update to the database has broken the CRM system. So anybody who wants to make my life a pain can, in fact, do so now by by becoming a host here in HPR.
Oh, really? Oh, we need to talk about that because I ain't no PHP expert, but I could probably do something to...
Well, you know, Dave, I don't actually want to fix it. I want to write a Python script that will just go in and add the entries. And I'm basically waiting for an excuse to do that. So,
Okay. I've been doing something similar to that in Perl for several years.
So nobody uses Perl, Dave. Nobody uses Perl.
It's a popular language.
It was a popular language.
No. Perl 6 is here. But,
My rule of thumb is if I can't do an ISO 8601 date in the language, then I'm not using it anymore.
It's just, I'm sure you can.
No, that's one of the Perl modules that's been deprecated or not supported anymore. So, bit of a bummer.
The problem with Perl is that there's quite a lot of bits and pieces that are getting tatty and showing their age and stuff and. People are still there. There's still a lot of people working on it. It's really, really busy, but it's not. It's way down the popularity charts, and it's not getting the tender, loving care it used to get.
No, strange. Anyway, shall we go through the shows?
Let's do that thing.
Okay, the first one we were looking at was how I helped my dad run a static website using SparkleShare. And this interested me simply because I've been thinking of doing something similar to this for HPR.
Well, it does have similarities to some of the little chats we've had about this. And it sounds really clever. I like this. I didn't fully understand it from the episode, but that's probably because I wasn't paying enough attention. But I looked at the website of SparkleShare, and it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily the sharing that I wanted to do. It was more the how he went about doing it, taking the GitLab pages. Because that would actually be quite cool, you know, for hosts. Hosts themselves could maintain their own host page and stuff in Git. And then, all the authentication could be done via SSH and you copy your keys up and blah, 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 blah. So, kind of cool.
Yeah, there's some potential, something like that anyway.
So I think we'll just get Clacky on that. Clacky, if you could just do that for us, that would be awesome. Thanks.
I'm sure he's delighted at that prospect.
So choking on some on his dinner over there. The following day, we had Operator with his home theater, Part 1 Harder. I always like to see the Part 1 from Operator, meaning we're going to get more shows. And he went through the setup of his media setup. Quite a lot of hardware here, actually, necessary to do this.
Yeah, quite an impressive list. Quite a lot of detail he's went into there. He's gone into. Yes, it's very clever. I think it's beyond my my understanding at the moment.
Yeah, and also cost $300 for
some stuff. A lot of sophisticated stuff.
And to be honest, I just have stopped watching TV, which is kind of ironic given the job that I do. But yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, I've rattled on about this many times. I don't watch the telly at all, and I don't have any great
desire. You don't even pay
to...
your license now. Yeah.
I don't know. Nobody's come and knocked at the door and told me to pay it yet, or since the last time.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's, I don't know. It's so many people I know tend to watch things on YouTube a lot. So I don't know. Yeah. YouTube ain't going to last forever, though.
Yeah, but I think it's set up, you know, a concept now that, well, you know, what's a video streaming service more than, you know, an RSS feed with a lot of bandwidth behind it, basically.
Yeah, true.
So the following day, we had somebody stealing my show, using my ideas, and basically putting out a show without even asking me about it. Who was that, Dave?
Oh, what a wicked bad person. I don't know who that could have been. So, yes.
I think the moral of the story is if you don't put out your shows when you say you're going to put out the shows, somebody will put out a show instead of you.
Yes. Have you done something similar to this then?
No, I had in my brain, Dave. But,
okay.
It's one of these ones. Like, Tattoo has done 3 or 4 shows, and the annoying thing is that your show and his shows have been better than the ones that I would have done, which is not only annoying that you bet me to it, but frustrating that you did a better job on it than I would have done.
Oh dear, oh, that's a shame. Well, yeah. Well, I'm such a perfectionist that I have to go take it to the minutest detail and probably bore everybody sick. But yeah, it was a fun project to do. It's one of these things where you think, oh, I'm going to beat this thing, and you do all sorts of weird stuff, and you look back and think, wow, there was a lot of bizarre things. There must have been an easier way.
Yeah. I have built a script. Once you were talking about this, actually talking about the subscription manager, which they're hiding extremely well, I switched my way of doing it to using the OPML file that the subscription manager allows you to get.
Okay. Had you been scraping before or something?
No, I was using YouTube DL with a date and time. So they have the feature download last sent. So I was doing a URL, and then I would put in the date that I last checked it on, and then pull that. But the side effect of that is that it has to check every single video, and there's a 2-second delay. So if you've got a lot of subscriptions and a lot of people, a lot of those subscriptions have a lot of videos, it still has to check every single video. Whereas a subscription list allows you to just look at the last 10, which is usually enough. You know, if you run it as frequently as I do. And then I just look in there. I'll do a show about it whenever. Currently a bit busy at the minute with life.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I also gave you a lead in, shall I say, to XML Starlet. We're still waiting for XML Starlet episode.
Yeah, but that requires a show on XML. So, yeah, I don't know. I just need to wake up some morning and just decide, right, we're going to do this.
It's a big subject, I know. I wouldn't want to do it.
Well, I actually hate XML and with a passion.
Yeah, me too.
And I also don't want to, you know, people who love XML go into big discussions about the document object model and all the rest. No, I just want to deal with it, get the information that I need, put it into a format I can work with and forget about it. Anyway, following day, we had the New Year's Eve show part 5, where we had lots of talk about guitars. Fascinating, I found.
Yes, there was some good stuff there. Not really heavily into guitars, but... appreciated hearing other people who were.
And it turned out to be that everybody on the New Year's show turned out to be autistic, including myself. So
yes, yes.
That's kind of strange. I wonder why that is, Dave.
I think the world is coming to the understanding that that characteristics that many people have are being classified as autism, and that ain't no bad thing, because there's lots of really wonderful people out there doing amazing things. So indeed, good for them.
Speaking of which, in other news, I have started a GitHub page. Have you dropped off, Dave, or have I been pressing the wrong button?
You've been off. I thought.
Oh my God!
Yes, you.
What was the last thing I said?
You said I have set up a GitHub page, I think, and then I thought, because sometimes we pause to go off and do a thing and then continue and hope that Truncate Silence will deal with the gap. I thought you were doing one of those clever things.
I was, in actual fact, holding the shift button instead of the cap lock button, Dave. I am truly a moron, it has to be said. Okay, fine. I put the... my wife has done a book. It's called Clearly Autistic in English, Duidelijk Autistisch in Dutch. She wrote it in LibreOffice, and I've just converted it to Markdown. And I know what you're thinking, Dave. Markdown.
I'm thinking, what a brilliant idea.
This just proves why I hate Markdown almost as much as I hate XML. But okay. So it's there, and then I've started the English literal translation, which is basically take the Google Translate and then convert the sentence into what could possibly be an English translation. But it is not, it doesn't meet the easy, simple English definition of what the book is to be. But I want to do the actual translation of the English differently, so that it is easier to read. But that we have the literal translation there to refer back to. So then anybody translating from English to other languages will have two versions of the same sentence to or the same paragraph to refer to. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, it does to me. Yes, it does make sense. Because it's if you do see things which are auto-translated and the English that is produced is very strange, because it has the structure of the original language, and it and languages tend to order their verbs and nouns and things in all sorts of weird, wonderful ways. So it sounds highly, highly desirable, but a hell of a job.
Yeah, it is, and it is remarkably rewarding to do it, because it's also made us focus more on on the actual book as well. Well, when you said that, did you mean that, or did you mean, because it's disambiguous, there's a English word may have two words for the same thing, like and solicitor versus barrister, or lawyer versus a legislator, I guess. I don't know what the American versions would be, but okay, anyway, that was that. Might be a useful resource at some point. So the following day, there's no comments. We're getting into the summer again and the traditional dry period and stuff. The following day we had the community news, well, the following Monday, community news. And there was one comment on that one, and that was from Clacky. Do you want to read that?
Yes, Clacky says, re-butchering. No butchering of fractalide. We pronounce it like you do. Now, tertiary and tuturto, on the other hand, smiley face.
Hardy, hardy, hard.
Yes, mind you, that name is a little hard to grasp. It's got too many U's and T's in it to be parsed quickly, I find.
Yes, and the man himself did a show the following day on MSIS2, which is a SIGWIN replacement, which is quite cool actually. And Claudio says MSIS2 is what SIGWIN should be. First off, thanks for the mention, good sir, smiley face. Secondly, thanks for this episode. As much as I use SIGWIN at work, I despise having to use SIGWIN installer to install, update, remove packages. MSIS2 is what I've always wanted from SIGWIN, an integrated command line package manager for updating packages inside of the POSIX compatible environment, just as you do on any Unix-like system. I have to start backing up my configuration files in order to make a big switch on my Windows PC at work. And my thoughts goes out to Claudia Mann for having to use a Windows PC at work.
Yes, yes.
I have had to use Cygwin in the past, and it is very, very frustrating.
Yeah, I did use it at work because I was forced to use a Windows PC sometimes, and I found Cygwin made it a lot more usable. But that was doing fairly simple stuff. I did point out to my colleagues that an operating system that had to draw you a picture of a file being moved from here to there or scrunched up and thrown away was a moronic system, but they didn't believe me.
Gosh, why not?
And that Cygwin could do it in seconds, whereas you sat watching this stupid graphic for ages while it deleted stuff. Ah. Absolutely.
Yeah, but in fairness, a lot of Windows admins use the console as well. So.
Yeah. I know. Anyway, there was a second comment. Gavtris said, Git bash. Linux newbie here. I'm working on a new project, and last week, as a requisite, needed to install Git for Windows. I was wondering about the voodoo magic behind Git bash, so thank you for the explanation. By the way, cool alternate beatbox version of the HPR outro, smiley face.
Yes, it is awesome. I always get confused when he does the show notes and it shows that there's no intro, but there is an outro.
Yes. No, it's like that. Yes, I always look forward to hearing that. So my son's doing a degree, doing a course in maths and one in computer science with the Open University at the moment. Prior to doing another degree, a music degree wasn't good enough for him. He wants to do another one. And in order to do a lot of stuff, he's learning Python on Windows. It has to be on Windows. And he was saying how foul it was. And I told him about this, MSys2, and he was so happy that he,
Good. The following day, we had Lost in Bronx, who's single versus multiple characters in a story. I don't know if Lost in Bronx is doing this just for me, but I'm so glad he is. And we need to come up with a name for this series, Dave.
Yeah, I think we said that last time, didn't we? Yeah.
Stories in story time?
Yeah. I'll make a note to think of something and throw you some ideas.
Or we could ask him.
Indeed, that's another idea, yes.
Following day, Archer72, who's back, excellent, did some DVD ripping using old hardware, which is good actually, because it's getting harder to find machines with DVDs in them now.
Yeah, true.
And I found myself that I wanted to watch Sister Act, and it wasn't available on Netflix or Hulu or any of the or HBO, the things that I have available. And I actually wanted to get it legally, so I could stream it from Thingy for €5, or I could buy it for €5 on DVD and get Sister Act 2 with it. So I bought it with DVD. So bizarre world.
Oh, quite. Yeah. Yes. So shall I do the comment on this one? There was one from Clatu who says, Neat. Nice to hear Slackware 32-bit still coming in useful. I don't mind that so many Linux distros are discarding 32-bit as long as somebody keeps it around, because while 32-bit hardware is fading, there's still a lot of it out there.
Yeah, and I was just the other day I wanted to set up a mind test server for the kids on an old HP laptop, and none of the major distros, Fedora dropped it. It was strange. I had to end up with Debian for.
No, it's a shame. It's sad that that's happening, and it's going. I can understand it, but it's going against the reusability argument for Linux, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. We had a big discussion on the last final New Year show about that. So, how to get started playing RPGs, Lost in Bronx and Klaatu, Team Tag, an intro to tabletop role-playing games, a show which I think I prompted them to do. And Red Rider 06 says, how to get started playing RPGs. I started participating in RPGs several months ago, but did none of the things mentioned in this presentation prior to actually playing the game. My GM, Game Master, took the small gathering of curious gamers through a couple of relatively short scenarios and stories, which kept the interest up and the mechanics of everything mentioned in the podcast at a double arm's length away. We didn't know it then, but he kept us focused on the game rather than too many details of the characters. Sure, we still built characters, but it was a very abbreviated process. Not until some months and many game sessions later did I actually do my own research and discover parts of what this podcast brings together very succinctly. And now I know a bit more about the whole podcast or process. This podcast is all the more interesting. Lost and Bronx and Plateau have done a splendid job laying out a very understandable and approachable process for the curious about to take part in an RPG. And the sound production was stellar too. Well done, gentlemen. Now, couldn't say it better myself.
Now, that was a superb comment, and it was an extremely well done episode. It was produced with two people doing their own pieces, I imagine, and sticking them together. It just came together brilliantly.
Seamlessly.
Yeah.
And you know, the nice editing between the two and the positions changing. It was almost as if they were in the same room. As far as Red Rider goes, he should be very thankful for the game master who did this and brought them. It seems like exactly what you want, somebody to get you motivated and interested, and then at a later date get all the additional stuff. So, but in lieu of having a game master as good as that, then I recommend this show. And I also will recommend this show when I hear people say about the audio quality being terrible on HPR. The audio quality can be terrible on HPR. It doesn't have to be terrible on HPR.
No. It's an example for us all, I think.
Now, NY Bill talks about calibration issues with his Siglent oscilloscope. And this is kind of a good one, because he does side-by-side comparisons, and his, as always, his slideshows are add to the episode very much. I really enjoyed this myself. And McNallu said, Oscillowatt, I too have a secret desire for an oscilloscope. I'm building a wee one from a kit just now, but that's mostly for fun. I'll need one that can handle 20 megahertz clock signals for troubleshooting my poor Amiga 3000, hence my interest in the show. Also, the HPR robot calls you Nibble too.
Yes. NY Bill replies, a chimp by another name. Yeah, the e-speak kind of butchers my nick. I bet NY Bill would sound about right, and he spelt it out phonetically. Hey, e-speak, I live in New York. But it actually says any bill, I think, rather than nibble. But good luck. Your scope build, 25 megahertz, will be right in the wheelhouse of the kit type scopes, he says. So,
really want, you know, I've got that one of those little Bitscope things. I mentioned it on the show, the New Year show. Yep. I really would like somebody to do a series on that Bitscope thing hooked up to a Raspberry Pi with a counter or something on it, just so that we could learn how to use the Bitscope with a Raspberry Pi. And if somebody is willing to do that show, I will happily arrange for a Bitscope and a Raspberry Pi to make its way to you for that purpose. Yeah. So, introduction to oscilloscoping. This is how badly and desperately I want this show.
Yeah.
Well, it's a cool little thing. It's got a logical analyzer and stuff on it as well. So, it would be nice just to know what an oscilloscope does, you know, be able to check some voltages, check pins going high, pins going low, maybe pulse width modulation. You can do that on the Pi. Then, you know, logic signals, maybe troubleshooting a serial interface or something. Basic stuff that, you know, would get you started, or at least give you enough that when somebody's doing a YouTube video on the more advanced function, you have a start. Or when you go to buy a real, and doing the air quotes, oscilloscope, that you kind of know, is it worth it to get the bigger one or the smaller one, or what you're looking for, you know, just to get your foot in the door. A bit like what we did with the ham radio, with the Bofang A5, that it's, you never want it as your main radio, but it's an introduction at least.
Yeah, I'd never thought of that. You're quite right. I used, you know, the sort of classic lab oscilloscope back in the 70s as a student, because I was doing electrophysiology stuff. So you stuck electrodes in some poor cockroach or something. That was what biology was like in them days. No, yeah. No, don't do that sort of thing. But yeah, so I knew enough to be able to do that. But I, given an oscilloscope, I would not know how, really how to do too much else. And I don't particularly want to find out about muscle potentials in cockroaches anymore. So yeah, I can see from the arguments being made here, I can see how useful it would be in a lab.
And those little Bitscope ones are quite, you know, they're probably crappy. And my bill is probably going, no, they're crap. But at least it'd be a start, you know, it's affordable. They're $100. So
there was, he did do a show on a DIY scope, you remember?
Yeah.
A couple of years back.
And
I
then
must admit, I was tempted to buy one of those. There were two versions, weren't there?
Yeah,
but there was a rip-off one. Go on, sorry.
And this is the one he spent lots of time afterwards going, yes, and the joy of troubleshooting.
Yes, he had fun troubleshooting it, but I think the likes of us might not. No, I have seen it. Yeah. I have seen a completely built kit for sale at the local maker fair, for example. But I can't justify one at the moment.
Yeah, but whether it's a kit or whatever, yeah, if it's in the bulk, ballpark of 75 to 100 euros, you know, $75 to $100, where you can, it makes it accessible for somebody that you can go, okay, is this something that I'm even going to be interested in? Or is this enough to be able to go, okay, well, I'm having this problem with the thing, I'll try and debug it with this, and then I'll go into work and I'll ask the person in work who's got a better oscilloscope to help. But anyway, following day, what is a stow? How does stow work? Why you'd want to use it, and what are its limitations?
Yeah. I started writing notes about this. I said, saying, sorry, Clacker, I really didn't follow this. But then I started reading, which I should have done first, and it's a GNU thing for doing clever stuff with software installation. We put all the software in one place and then symlink it to the scattered places all over the place. And that's actually very clever.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. It's I couldn't, from quickly reading the GNU stow stuff, it wasn't entirely clear how you told it where the original stuff was and where it was to go. But I'm sure that's something that one could work through.
I think the GNU project's method of explaining stuff is terrible.
Some of those manuals are grim indeed. Yeah.
They don't do themselves any favors. But this is a good one to have, because I do have situations where I would definitely like to link libraries and stuff to various different things without all the hassle that goes along with it. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, we used to run a thing called Deck Athena at work, and that was a system where all your software was on central servers, and you NFS mounted it on your workstation. So the workstations were fairly stateless, not totally, but well, they were stateless, but they had some local operating system. You could do it with multiple architectures, so you could run a PC against it, and you could run a Unix box against it. And it was also did fancy tricks with linking stuff in such a way that it was seamless. I'm stunned that this sort of stuff is being done still in this sort of way. It's quite a revelation. I found it fascinating.
It's still useful, you see. That's why.
Yeah.
Get ahead with GitHead. See what Klaatu did there?
Very good.
And he actually put in some commands into his show notes, which I approve of heartily, Klaatu. This, for once, cleared up Git for me again. This made an awful lot of sense, that it's like the head reader of a tape cassette. So very good. I'm enjoying this episode, but actually the whole, and we'll come to that again as one of the other shows, and I'll save my comment until then. Speaking of series I'm enjoying, GNU Orc Part 11, and this one, Be Easy, Your Better Half, did a rundown of the various different numeric functions and string functions, which you can call using a one-liner in awk. and support stuff that might not be available to you in your bash script, which is basically what I got out of it.
Yes, it's powerful. It's got a lot of stuff in there. It's a complete standalone language to a large extent.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah.
And people are just using it as, why does it have this really weird structure? Because you're shorthanding it, because it's a programming language.
Yeah, it's in my time, I think I might have said this before, but I started using it way back in the 80s. And it since then, it's grown a lot. There's a lot of extra goodies in there, and it's made it much more powerful. So, it was good then, but it's much better now.
No, it's excellent. I'm really enjoying the series. You're doing a good job on that. Keep it coming. By the way, have you noticed all the hosts this month are the recurring stalwarts who are keeping us going? More on that later as well. 6th annual HPR New Year's show. We had big discussion about firewall distros, and I think Dodo Dummy made a comment on the IRC channel, Oddcast Planet on Freenode, about that it was painful to listen to this because you had a whole go of nerds not answering the question that was being asked, basically, not recommending him what to do with the firewall and telling him to do something else. And while I can see his point, running a firewall, running a machine, sometimes it's a bad idea. What he was suggesting was running a firewall on a machine that has so much capabilities. And then he wanted to load additional stuff on that, but then you're negating what the whole purpose of a firewall is to give separation of concerns between two things. So the better idea would not be to run the firewall on there and to run the firewall on a cheap, dedicated little device and use the machine as a machine. But
yeah, that sounded very sensible. I thought the advice was excellent. It's certainly something my experience has been with dedicated firewall hardware in my job.
Yeah.
Where there was no other choice, but it makes very good sense what the advice that was given.
Yeah, and I understand that you start off with something, but sometimes what you're suggesting to do is not the best thing. But I do understand Dodo Dummy's point that it is frustrating when you ask a question and somebody says, on a forum, the classic, I want to do this with this, and then the first answer is, no, you shouldn't use that, you should use this, and then the subsequent thread then proceeds into a discussion about the thing that you actually don't want to do. But in the case of that discussion, I felt that it was fairly much covered all the points.
Yes. Go on.
Yeah. Okay. And we had a discussion about 3D printers.
Well, that was the bit I was just going to say. I found that really interesting. Having just ordered one, the first one I've ever bought, I was sort of partly pushed into it by listening to that, I have to say.
Which one did you order?
I bought a Creality. There are two models of Creality. There's a CR10, which is a more expensive one, it's about £500, something like that. Quite a large device. I bought the newer, slightly smaller one called the Ezer 3, which is only £200, and you can get it for less than that, actually, if you buy it from China or you're happy to buy it through eBay or whatever. But I got it off Amazon, so it's a little bit more expensive. But it looks like it's going to be quite good, as far as I can see from the reviews and the YouTube tutorials and stuff about it. So yeah, it was, and I'm hoping to be able to use. Well, maybe try a Tinkercad. So it's useful just being pointed at some of these things. Fusion 360 means you need a Windows machine, and I don't have one. I don't really want one.
Yep.
But there's OpenSCAD, which looks really interesting, though it's driven with a command language, which is a bit odd, but still appeals to me.
That's that looks like a nice little printer. Okay, cool. I expect there will be shows coming about this.
Yes, no doubt at all. And I'll have to create something on it stop the cat making noises in the background when I'm talking. But, I can't think what that is.
And then I started soldering my my board PCB.
Yes, that sounded quite a challenge. Did you manage to get it up and running?
I got it. I ordered another one that was fully assembled, and that's here. And I ordered one that had the surface-mounted components already on there, and then doing it. But to be honest, unlike in my build, I did not relish the idea of troubleshooting it. I really just wanted it to work. I would love, as well, just to know what actually went wrong with it. So I might try sometime building the other one, but as you know, I'm not able to... I don't have time at the moment to cut with this core thing that's going on. Okay, building trust was the following day. Quasi-philosophical musings about how to build trust both online and in real life. And there was one comment, and it was from me. Profound. And on our about page, we have the quote, "Anybody who has shown long-term dedication to a project and is trusted by the community can become an admin." It was almost as if Tlatu was referring to HPR as a project.
Well, he did make several mentions of HPR, didn't he? Which I thought was quite a good idea given the audience and stuff. But yeah, it's really well put together. I do admire his ability to, I think, just sort of do this sort of stuff more or less off the cuff, but I don't know that that's a fact, but it certainly sounds as if he's able to utter these things off the top of his head. I can't do.
Yeah, I think he Lost in Bronx and another villain would be Deep Geek, of course, seem to be three people who always say things that are extremely deep and well thought out and must be highly intelligent people. And I fear that if I ever met any of those three in person, you know, that they would be just waffling idiots who just use the medium of podcasting and writing as a means to distill their drivel and then only produce the best of their thoughts, unlike me. I very much doubt myself.
Yes. One thing I noted here was that I liked the way Tlatu pointed out the suspicious nature of Microsoft in their pro Linux stance at the moment. Because that's how I read what he was saying. Really, that I think it is a suspicion that we've all had. It stops me from really wanting to get involved. Well, I've always wanted to avoid being involved with Microsoft, but I'm even less keen to do so these days. And it seems to me like a strategy that they're working towards a goal over a long period of time. So anyway,
the well-known embrace, extend, extinguish. The extend part, of course, is kind of muted by the negated by the open source free and open source software licenses, which means you, as they extend, you can also extend. So
anyway, it's just nice to hear somebody reinforcing your own suspicions. That's all, really. It's just part of being in the bubble, I guess, or something.
Yeah, but I think a lot of that, well, what he said applies to HPR as a community. That's how I got this job, how you got on board was, you know, you were just around and reliable. And it also explains why we're not rushing out to get contributions for code from people, because if somebody comes and people have offered in the past to do coding for us and stuff, and so that's fine, but you know, you're going to have to support it for 2 years, because if you disappear, then I'm going to have to learn whatever technology that you have, which is fine. But then quite a lot of people just, you know, never reply then after that, or just walk away from the project, because this is a long-term project we have here. Back, how long are we going now?
I'm sure you can remember better than I can.
12 years, 7 months, 28 days, Dave. It's on the main page of the thing. So like 2 years, 2 years is nothing here, you know. It's only a drop in the ocean to HPR as a project. So yes, the following day we had Stykes, STYX, a purely function static site generator. This is another one from Plucky. Read the comments. Tell us what it's about.
It's I'm yes.
Your
pronunciation threw me slightly there because I would pronounce it sticks to rhyme with nicks.
It will be nicks. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I see what they did there. Yeah.
I was hesitating over whether to tell you or not, but anyway, it's yeah. So there was a comment from Clacker who says, an addendum. Sticks was written by Eric Sagnus, I would imagine you pronounced that. I neglected to name the author because his name wasn't on my mind at the time. Sticks was written by Eric Sagnus, and if you look at his repositories on GitHub, it's not really surprising that he would be the one to write a site generator in Nix, and he links to the GitHub location.
If he keeps doing these shows, we're going to have to learn Nix, you know that.
Yeah. I've sort of partially avoided it, to be honest with you, because it sounds interesting and complicated and like a huge time suck potentially. So I only got so many brain cells left, you know, so I don't want to use up too many on things that gonna demand too much.
And I'm so glad you stopped correcting my English, because the following day we had Battling with English Part 1, Misunderstandings about English Grammar, Spelling and Pronunciation. And you have no idea how much I feared what you were going to say in this show. And this is an example of how I corrected Ken on show 482.
No, I wouldn't do that. I wanted to be friendly.
I think you and I both know that my wardrobe right here is covered in emails from you with the correct pronunciation and the correct explanation of each of various different words, Dave.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is my perfectionist brain saying this is the right way to do it, and you're doing it the wrong way.
No, you did it. Your introduction makes a lot of sense, and you did it quite correctly. It was interesting about the nice part, actually, that was only recently accepted to be a nice.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating how the language is changing, sometimes in ways that you wish it wouldn't. I've got one or two anecdotes coming up later on. I'm trying not to go into rants about them, because I have a tendency to want to rant about them because they annoy me. But you know, just pointing out that things are changing. Sometimes the thing that really does annoy me, actually, and it shouldn't, is that an expression gets warped by some sort of process where people misspell it. And as a consequence, the misspelt version, which makes a species of sense, because it's a word, it's misspelt into a synonym, then becomes the accepted way of doing it. And yet it makes no sense. Like, this is one I'm not going to do in the series probably, the proof is in the pudding. That's not a specific one, but what does that mean? This doesn't mean anything at all, but you hear it so much.
It sounds
proof
like
is in the pudding. What good, is this proof pudding that you're eating?
Sounds like an Agatha Christie novel or something.
No, but the real expression, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, where proof means the check on the quality, the revelation as to what sort of quality it is only determined by eating it. So the proof of the pudding is in the eating. But people have mangled that. The proof is in the pudding, which is totally nonsensical.
Yes, but you've also mangled that, because it should be the proof is in the... proof is... What was it again? The proof is in the...
The proof is in the pudding or something like that. So, the proof of the pudding is in the eating.
Eating of it. Should have the of it at the end.
Well, yeah, maybe. But the original, I don't think said of it, in fact.
Okay, well, let me Google that for you.
But I would need to go... this is going to be fun. We should do a double-ended show here, actually. We should should be having battles over expressions and spelling and things.
Yeah, some people are saying the proof of the pudding is in the eating. But that doesn't sound like there's an end to the sentence.
No, but it's quite an old expression. It's using a more archaic form of English, which is why sometimes these things get updated and turned into nonsense, because the intention is no longer understood, and then it gets turned into something nonsensical.
And that annoys me, but there you go. I go through my life being annoyed.
I feel your pain. I do. I do.
Anyway.
Mr. X with his favorite browser extension, OneTab. Any longing to use this extension at all?
Well, that's an interesting question because I was listening to this and thinking, well, why? Why would you want to use this? And then I realized, hang on, he's talking about Firefox. And I actually used the tab groups thing that he says is now no longer supported. But it just so happens that I'm running Debian testing, which did a weird thing that took Firefox, renamed it as whatever it is, Ice Weasel. Pigeon or something, I don't know. Ice Weasel. And then for some reason or other, they relented and gave it back its name of Firefox. But in doing so, it seems to have frozen in testing. So I'm on version, is it 52 or 5.2? 5.2 anyway, which still supports tab groups, and I love them. But if I get moved on to 57, which is possible, then I can't use tab groups anymore. I guess one tab would be a reasonable way of doing it, because you can have more than one tab, I think, can't you? Do you use it?
I don't know. No, I don't use this feature at all. I have a tab toolbar.
Okay.
Bookmark toolbar.
I do like to group tabs and have them lurking around, but they do use up resources, and so no. But it's great. All of my HBR shows that I'm planning exist as tab groups on what's it called? Pale Moon. I'm using Pale Moon, which offers you a nicer tab group thing. Mm. And there's bazillions of them in there. So it's a great feature. I don't know who is it that keeps destroying these things and telling us that we mustn't have them anymore. I don't know.
Usability experts, Dave.
Well, I'd have to go and smack them about the face, but yeah, no. I'm never irritated, by the way.
Oh, Jesus, Dave, what have they been putting in the water over there in Scotland?
No, but I thought it was a great show. It was well explained, and it certainly got me thinking.
Indeed. The following day was GDPR Day. Oh, I've been waiting for this one for so long. And I would have loved to do a better episode than the one I did, but I had no choice because basically my recording setup was just terrible. I recorded it not on my Zoom H3, and my attempt to truncate silence caused a lot of issues. But anyway, it is what it is.
Okay. Now, Clack says, the date, how very appropriate. This would be released precisely for May the 25th. Smiley face.
Which is why I had to rush it out, because I knew I had to look at an alarm came up on my agenda that GDPR Day was coming up. Well, I knew it was anyway. And then I saw that the date was free, and then I wanted to record immediately, and then, Anyway, it's a show if it's on the server, Dave.
Yeah, I thought it was great. It covered the subject in a way that made me much more alert as to what was going on. Obviously, I knew it was happening, but hadn't yet got around to looking at the details. And it was a good way to get me to go and start reading things.
Yep. So, and my bill said it was a nice TLDR, a nice summary of the GDPR. Ken, I was wondering what it was all about. And I have noticed everyone and their brother sending me out policy updates these days. But as I doubt that GDPR pertains to my little server, I wasn't really paying too much attention. But you did the deep dive for me, smiley face. By the way, you might want to do noise reduction, then truncate silence. This one sounded a bit like a guy in a radio keying up the mic at random times while he was talking. Actually, that was caused by the truncate silence. So, okay. Sorry about the audio, but
yeah. Well, it happens. It happens. It was audible. I actually process audio anyway. I do a normalize on all the HBR. Quite a lot of other podcasts as well, and also speed up things. So it sounded pretty good to me. Just had to turn the volume up a bit.
I might actually end up doing a few follow-up shows on the GDPR and how it has panned out, because it's awesome. Sent out quite a few emails requesting information and stuff since.
Ooh, cool. Yes. I must start looking to see when I can do that, because it sounds like it's wonderful to have such power.
You can do it right now.
Yeah.
All of these things apply to you in the UK. And who is to say that somebody else in another jurisdiction might not be an EU citizen or might not be resident in an EU country? So there you go. Because it also applies to, say, somebody coming over and just stopping for a vacation in Europe, then the law applies to them equally.
Very good. Yeah.
So, soundscapes. This was Mr. X taking his dog for a walk. It sounded like he was taking his horse for a walk. Did you get that?
Yes, I did. Yes, yes. I think he says something like that in the notes. Yeah. Well, the rhythmic clinking sounds, it's more like I'm riding a horse than walking the dog.
It was nice.
It's good. It taught me a bit of Scottish slang as well. The toley bone is a that word is it should make the episode explicit probably.
And is it not?
Oh, it is. Yes. Well done. Yes. So there you go. That's a good.
Yes, it's explicit. Yes.
Yes.
I have no idea what toley bone is. I'm now now fascinated, which of course turns this one into an explicit. Oh dear.
Now it's. Yeah, I'd like to know who is walking.
You know what would be a good series? Past my front door. Mm-hmm. Is rude words from around the world. That would be a good one.
Yeah. That would be fun, wouldn't it? And why are they rude?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Why? Yeah. Yeah. So and rude words from history too, probably. So
yeah.
Not allowed to say ankle in the Victorian times and stuff like that.
Dear.
Or leg, for that matter. It's very rude.
I look forward to hearing the show about it, Dave. The following day, I bought a laptop in which Tlake takes months, possibly years, to buy a laptop, but comes out pretty pleased. I was surprised at he mentioned a small little sub 100 euro laptop, and it's not in the show notes. What was it called?
He did. It was a Pine something or other. What is it? I'd heard other people mentioning it. I didn't make a note of what it was. Yeah, I was expecting to see it in the notes, as you did, obviously.
At the time, I went to, Pine 64 single board computers. You'll find it at pine64.org, but it was actually the Pinebook. And if somebody has one of these, I would really like to see it, because I'm looking for something that I can bring on the train that's form factor of Acer Aspire 1, you know, the netbooks. You can't get netbooks for love and money. And they were so handy because they fitted exactly in the small, you know, they call them stop trains here. They're all service trains. So they're really tiny seats, really crimped seats and stuff. And they're just ideal to have an open and you can have your email and stuff there. So I was very tempted to get this one. If you know of this one or another netbook that's available that will run a relatively modern distro, that would be ideal. Ideal if it also was an i386, because I got some proprietary stuff that requires for the firewall or for the use the VPN requires an i386 architecture.
Cool. Yeah. My daughter and my son's girlfriend both have quite small laptops, which are not hugely. Not a great deal bigger than my old Triple E PC. I know one of them suddenly brain goes blank. The thing that was that IBM used to sell. What was that called now?
ThinkPad.
Yeah, it's a little ThinkPad.
Hmm.
I can find out more if that yes. sounds interesting.
Well, my actual requirements would be. Cheap, very very cheap.
Yeah.
That ideally it runs Linux and that it's a small form factor, but you could still type on it with a not touch type, but peck, search and
peck. My understanding, both of these are second hand. I think they were eBay purchases. My son's quite good at spotting these things. I think he was responsible for finding the deals and stuff, but I'll find out more if I might be talking nonsense, of course, but I'll let you know one way or another.
Yeah, if you do you have your old EPC?
I do, yeah.
If you could take a photo with them with that over it, so then I get an idea of how big it is.
Yeah, okay, we'll do.
Cool. The following day, Action in Storytelling, LNB. Forgive the audio quality because I'm recording it in a car. And he was talking about action in storytelling, that's static action. And I was reminded of the scene in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, where the gunfight scene. All that happens is they start in a group and then they go to three different corners of the circle. And the whole thing was kind of describing that. It was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was an interesting analysis, I have to say.
Very, very good. I wonder how many more of these he has. Introduction to Fossil was the next day by Klaatu. And this seems to me an altogether more sane system of storing files than Git.
Well, yeah, yeah. I was really pleased to hear that Klaatu was doing this. I never really looked at Fossil, but I certainly knew of it before I got into Git. It's sort of about the same vintage as Git. I'm not sure. It's Richard Hipp, isn't it? The guy created SQLite.
Exactly. And
I've certainly heard him being interviewed about it. I think it was on the Twit Network show, whatever that is called, Floss Weekly.
Yeah.
And he is a very bright fella, and his design sounded really nice. And what Klaatu was saying was really confirmed that. Sounds really clever, and it's all in a SQLite database. Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Cool.
I must go and try it out, because it's the sort of thing you could use for your own purposes quite effectively, I think. Not necessarily because you could share it with other people as well, but I don't have any call to do that. But for some of my own personal projects, it might be a better solution than Git.
Do you think? Yeah, exactly. I'm just tempted to have a look, to be honest, because the more Klaatu goes into Git, I mean, I need to know Git anyway for work and stuff, but the more he goes into it, the more I realize how little I know about it, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, same here.
Shall we go through the comments from last month? There was only actually one comment by Dodo Dummy, and it was a comment that related to show the HBR Audio Club, which was Audio Club 10, which was, let me see, it was a review of Revolution Radio by Seth Kenlan. Wow, this was a while back, 2015-05-05. And this tickles all of my private places. Okay, just the references to freak culture. Loved the reader's voice, liked the story. God, that Seth Kenlan's voice reminds me of somebody. No idea who. I agree with Pokey about the timing of things regarding canned food, MREs, etc., but I don't keep it didn't keep me out of the story. I thought it was strange that people had forgotten so much in so few years, but I have some real life situations where people aren't thought anything for a generation, and this is a bit like this. I like the glitches these guys mentioned. I can confirm that the issue with OGG files in the album art. I didn't listen to this until after I listened to the audiobook. I had the same issue. Downloaded fine, but wouldn't play in Rockbox. A little searching led me to a suggestion that if the OGG plays okay in VLC, other players, but not Rockbox, the album is likely to be the culprit. Remove them with audio tag tool and all as well. If memory serves, the Rockbox folk says it's because it only has 1 megabyte for metadata. Interesting.
That's good.
And that was, Seth Kenlan's story about a universe where people build communities based on the different licenses, or inspired by the different software licenses that there are available. A nice essay if you're interested in that. Anything else there, Dave, in the old comments?
There's nothing else. We've covered everything else. It's quite unusual. You must have covered all the other ones last episode then.
Yep.
Cool.
And then we had the call for shows, because it's into the summer again, and now the number of shows traditionally falls off. We've been able to carry it this month due to the fact that the old regulars, the people we trust, the people who are around all the time, those people have contributed shows for us and kept us going. So if you would like to build up brownie points or trust points within the community, this is where you show us the love by committing shows to us. That is, it's no secret how trust is built up in HBR. You contribute shows, you're listening to the call for shows, you're keeping an eye on the old queue there. When things go a bit low, you submit shows. It ain't rocket science. Yep, Dave? Yep.
Good point. There's any other business? Just a couple of things.
Yep.
First one, just to highlight that there have been some changes to the website. The first one is pretty obvious. I think most people will have seen it. The tags for show now being displayed in the header of each show page. And
I doubt most people go even to the website, Dave.
Wow. How is that possible? Anyway, it's there if you want to know what the tags are. And we discovered a fault in the comment display code, which resulted in comments that had a percent sign in them not to be displayed. And we fixed that. So it did affect a few comments, but I don't think anybody noticed till I happened to do so, I think. So it took me a while. So,
and yeah, on the thanks for that.
Yep. On the tags front, not a huge lot to say. Windigo was very kindly sent in a couple of updates this month. I have not managed to find the time to do any myself, so we're just two done this particular month. But thanks to all contributors.
Okay, so that is pretty much that. Yes, if people would like to send in some shows, that would be excellent. How about you decide on the series, folks? You sit down, you write it over the next week, you record three or four shows the following week, and then you submit them. That would be absolutely awesome. Paste them out, leaving gaps for other people to, new hosts to submit shows, and the world will be a wonderful place. It will, truly.
Let's hope.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that was very deep. Yes, any other nukes, Dave? No?
No, I don't think so.
I was thinking of going to Odd Camp with the family. It doesn't look like I will get there with the family this year due to having to go to Ireland with the family two additional times, which is a bit of a bummer because I was kind of looking forward to that. I've been thinking about going over myself, but the costs are pretty much, you know, except for the flights and the prices will be more or less the same. So not even sure I'll be able to do that, Dave.
That's a shame. That's a shame. But there you go. Yes, it's an expensive process. It's not hugely cheap for me, and I just have to get the train and find a hotel. But
trains are very expensive in the UK. I have to say that
trains are insanely. Wow. Last dog camp I went to in Oxford, when I went by train, I drove to in Liverpool, but the one in Oxford. Was relatively easy to find the tickets, buy the tickets, and they were not massively expensive. They were more expensive than they should be, I believe. But I was looking for tickets this time, and it said it'll either cost you £250 to get from Edinburgh to Sheffield, or you can wait until 12 weeks before your departure date, and then you can try and see if you can get what they call an advance ticket. So I had to set alarms for myself to do this. I did, and I got a return ticket for 80 odd pounds. But it's a hugely complicated process. Plus, also the whole train system's falling apart at the moment, as far as I can see. There's been massive problems with timetabling and failure to run services and putting buses on instead all across the country. It's an absolute shambles.
Not good.
No.
Okay. So, enough of this. All right. I will go and edit the show.
Okay.
The last community news. For some reason, I'm getting a background echo coming through.
Oh, don't know why that would be.
Okay.
There's no. I haven't got a speaker on or anything. No.
Strange. The last community news. I ended up having to record it twice. So that three times actually. That was not pleasant. And the same with. Same with that GDPR show. So hopefully my Murphy issues will have disappeared.
Yes, let's hope so. If not, hopefully my recording will cover you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dave. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public.
Radio.
Join us now and save your software. You'll be free, hacker. You'll be free, hacker. You'll be free.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.